The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Go to geico.com today.
Fantasy, you're in the hole 6010.
Happy New Year and welcome into the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. You're probably saying like, dude, it's March 13th. Happy New Year. Like,
dude, it's March 13th.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Matthew Berry, who is here with me. I am Field Yates and Mike Clay here as well. We are taping this 2 hours before the NFL new league year begins, but don't we need to amend the schedule? Like, what is this, like, this notion that free agency begins at 4 p.m.?
It's clearly like it's going to be so anticlimactic because I feel like because people like Adam Schefter and you, Field Yates, and Josina Anderson and Diana Rossini and Dan Graziano and all of our NFL insiders just out there absolutely crushing it. And we know, like, it feels like 85% of the moves at this point. There's still some free agents left to fall, but barring an Anthony-like,
seeing an
Anthony Barr-like move.
How long did you have that one saved up?
That? Honestly, that just came up.
Did DJ write that? I think
and
DJ
honestly,
that,
it literally just came to me right now. that we sort of know where everyone's going to land, and so it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's sort of like having all of your Christmas gifts before Christmas has actually arrived, but there is a ton of news to get to, and let's be honest, one thing that we have to say, and this is, again, at 2 o'clock, 2 hours before the new league year begins, things can change. Matthew just mentioned Anthony Barr. That's the one change we have heard so far. When a player intended to sign with one team, backed out, signed with a different team. He went from the Jets to the Vikings, and now we think he's going to stay in Minnesota for the long haul.
Right, and don't forget, like, it's not just about a player changing his mind. I mean, there is another one. Rashad Perryman had agreed to a deal to stay in Cleveland, and then with the OBJ trade, which obviously we're going to get to in a second here, he has asked for and been given his release, or they'd verbally agreed to a deal, and then both parties agreed to undo the deal. And so I believe Perriman is going
Tampa Bay.
Yes, he is. So we'll see some stuff like that. And don't forget, there's always the Ravens kind of move where they fail a physical. Remember when they did Ryan Grant dirty last year? Where Ryan Grant?
I'd love to see Ryan Grant get paid this offseason because like he got jobbed last year.
He really did.
4 years, $27 million turned into 1 year and like $3 million with the Colts.
Right. And he passed his physical with the Colts like 2 days later. And then didn't he play like every game with the Colts this year?
Yes.
I believe he did.
All right. So Daniel wants us to get going. And let's begin with the biggest story. Yeah. Two of the biggest stories. I guess let's put them into one and the same. Two major trades. Not even free agency during free agency.
Stefania boondoggling, by the way. Let's just be clear. Everyone's wondering, where's Stefania? She's boondoggling.
She's probably in Cleveland. Everybody's there now. Stefania's in Cleveland
hanging out with all the other ones. She's traded to the Browns media group.
she might have been.
So let's get to this, guys. Antonio Brown traded to the Oakland Raiders, going from the Pittsburgh Steelers, who get a third and a fifth round pick. The compensation for Pittsburgh is obviously not significant here. Matthew, let's cut right to the chase. Antonio Brown, has his value been, I don't want to say zapped, but going from Ben Roethlisberger to Derek Carr and that disaster offense, is Antonio Brown still an elite fantasy wide receiver after this maneuver?
The answer to both questions is yes. Yes, his value has been zapped. Yes, he's still an elite fantasy wide receiver. He's still inside my top 10, but a guy that was the consensus number one wide receiver in fantasy for the last 5 years is no longer... I don't think he's even in consideration for the number one wide receiver. There's a lot of guys that if you wanted to take him number one overall, like I have Davante Adams at number one, but if you want to take Hopkins, if you want to take Beckham now that he's with Cleveland, you want to take Thomas or Julio or Tyreek Hill at one, I wouldn't look at you weird, you know, honestly. And I don't think Antonio Brown is in that conversation anymore. Obviously going from Roethlisberger, to Carr is a downgrade. Think about how many times that, we saw Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger just make magic on a broken play, a playground play, if you will, where Ben extended the play and just Brown would just make something happen. They just knew where each other were. And I just don't think you're going to have that connection, obviously, with Derek Carr. Certainly not immediately. You think about, Derek Carr, certainly not Ben Roethlisberger and the Raiders. Yes, their offense improves with Antonio Brown, but past 5 years, Steelers fourth in terms of the number of red zone drives in the NFL. Antonio Brown led the NFL in red zone targets, red zone receptions, red zone touchdown receptions over that stretch. And over the last 2 years, the Raiders, 30th in red zone drives, 24th in red zone pass percentage. That'll go up now that they have AB, but still 29th in red zone touchdowns. It's just not going to be as nearly as an efficient an offense, Mike.
Yeah, and he's now over age 30. We saw his efficiency come down a little bit last season. He's going from what was easily the pass-heaviest offense in the NFL to more of a balanced offense, most likely.
Sure.
For the Raiders, but, you know, I'll say this. We're talking about some of the negative stuff. You're kind of pointing out why maybe he doesn't have quite the ceiling that he had in the past. I agree with that, but we're still ranking him as kind of a mid-pack wide receiver one. And the reason is, you know, he's going to be high volume. He's probably going to push for a 30% target share in this offense. Let's be honest. It's where
he's been
in Pittsburgh. He'll be similar. So we still like that volume as king. And I will say this in his defense, in Derek Carr's defense, honestly, I think he's now at the point where he might be a little underrated. He was overrated for so long. Now he might be underrated. Last season.
Derek Carr, what did I say? No, I'm just clarifying that Derek Carr might be underrated versus Antonio Brown.
Exactly.
Just clarifying that.
Exactly. His efficiency across the board, actually very similar to Big Ben's last year. I'm not saying he's as good, but keep in mind, he was conservative, but he completed a very high percentage of his passes last season, 69%, and he was off target on 10.1% of his throws. That was best in the NFL. So he actually quietly bounced back a little bit. He took a lot of sacks. He didn't throw too many touchdowns in that offense, had too many fumbles. That kind of really killed his fantasy season. But I think he's kind of entered that underrated part a little bit, and you add Antonio Brown into this offense, I think he can help him at least put up a huge season.
One thing I think we need to remember, when players get traded from an offense that was amazing and like all these target share numbers for Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh, and it's like you're applying them to the top wide receiver in Oakland, is part of it is like chicken versus egg syndrome, right? Like they didn't have a player of Antonio Brown's caliber. So sometimes trying to slot Antonio Brown into a role that was utilized for guys, and I get it, Amari Cooper is an awesome receiver, but we knew from the get-go Amari Cooper was not a fit with what John Gruden wanted to do offensively.
Although a year ago at this time, John Gruden was like, the offense is going to run through Amari Cooper, and we talked about, listen, and
a year ago at this time, they traded Khalil Mack because they didn't want to pay him.
Right.
They paid Antonio Brown and Trent Brown.
100%, but my point is just that, look, we thought and Amari Cooper did get a pretty high target share initially and just inconsistent. And what happens, Field, that one of the reasons why Antonio Brown is no longer in Pittsburgh is not that he can't play anymore. It's that he wore out his welcome. And not to delve into, like, I think there's a lot of people to blame for why that situation went bad. I think Brown is part of that problem. I don't think he's the only problem there in Pittsburgh. But what happens when the Raiders are, you know, 3-8 and everyone's going, hey, Antonio Brown, we're paying you all this money and you guys stink. And by the way, you're leaving for Las Vegas next year. And like, people are booing, which he's not used to. And does that, you know, here's a guy that, you know, has been a malcontent at various points in his career. Does that happen? That's a concern, I think, when you're drafting Antonio Brown for fantasy.
Listen, unquestionably, Antonio Brown's behavior is a big part of why he was traded. We're going to keep an eye on it, but I'm going to take the optimistic view that, hey, he got paid. Hey, he is no longer, you know, the co-number one wide receiver. He's not being threatened for team MVP by his teammate. I think Antonio Brown is the unquestioned number one guy there and happy for now in Oakland. By the way, another wide receiver added to Oakland just minutes ago. Tyrell Williams, former Chargers demon, is now headed to Oakland as well. Don't know the terms yet on that deal, but I would expect it to be for potentially 8 figures per season. Tyrell Williams, tons of speed. This is a guy that would have seen way more production if not for the fact that he played behind Keenan Allen and alongside Mike Williams, too.
Yeah, that's a really interesting move. I mean, you know, we spoke to offense coordinator Greg Olsen at the Combine. We played clips on it, and it was interesting. We asked him about his wide receiver, and he mentioned Jordan Nelson and Marcel Aitman and Seth Robertson. I mean, you know, he towed the company line, but it was clear that they wanted some more. I think the word he used was depth, but that they felt like they needed some help there. And so obviously they've gone out and gotten it. Antonio Brown and Tyrell Williams. Mike, I'll let you react to Tyrell Williams in a second. I think he's a talented wide receiver and potentially a sleeper in this offense. But just to sort of wrap up on Antonio Brown, here are the players that I have. Here's the wide receivers I have ranked ahead of Antonio Brown. You tell me if you disagree with any one of these players. We can listen. It's March. You know, you don't need to hold me to any of these rankings right now. These are all tentative, and we're still waiting for some free agency dominoes to drop. But just in general, tell me if you would draft Antonio Brown over any of these players. Devontae Adams?
No.
DeAndre Hopkins?
Nope.
No.
Odell Beckham Jr., now in the Browns.
Yeah, it's a conversation at that point for me.
That's a close call. I have Brown just ahead. It's close.
Interesting. Juju.
I'm liking Juju. I'm leaning Juju. I think he's going to be great in that.
I prefer Juju Smith-Schuster. I prefer Beckham to Antonio Brown. Tyreek Hill or Antonio Brown?
I'm going Brown.
I'm thinking one Tyreek Hill. I think I'm there's a chance that Tyreek Hill has more raw points, even if it's...
Yeah, I'm going Tyreek Hill. Michael Thomas.
Thomas.
Michael Thomas.
And Julio Jones.
Julio.
I agree.
Much to Daniel's chagrin.
Yeah. Keenan Allen.
That's close.
Brown. It sounds like you're a little lower on Brown. A little bit. I think
that we're in the same tier here.
See, I think he's slightly higher on Brown. By the way, all those players I just laid, I have higher than Antonio Brown.
Okay. So maybe you're a little lower. Okay.
I'm a little lower on Brown.
I'm in the middle. But again, we talked about this off the air. I think from anywhere from the 2 to 3 range to the 8 to 9 range, I'm not going to argue with you. There's a lot of talent there, a lot of high volume guys. It's just the nature of the NFL now. We're passing more than ever. We're scoring more than ever. These guys are superstars. I don't think there's necessarily a wrong answer.
And we'll talk about this when we get into Le'Veon Bell, but I will tell you, I think this might be a year where you actually want to pick towards the end of the first round because there's a lot of talent there, as we just said, in terms of the wide receivers. And when you talk about the running backs, there's sort of a tier there as well. Like they're all bunched together. And I think you might rather have a pick at, 10, 11 or, 8 and 12 kind of thing versus the number one pick and, pick 21.
All right, so let's move along here to the other
pick 20.
Massive wide receiver trade. Not a joke here, guys. Odell Beckham Jr. has joined the land. Keith Lipscomb was doing somersaults and cartwheels and backflips all throughout the streets of whatever town he lives in.
Really quick story. This news broke while we were in the bowling playoffs last night, the ESPN League. Our team with Daniel, of course, and Kyle and DJ.
Thirsty Kyle, right?
Against Keith's team. Right. Geriatrics, okay? Game one's going, they beat us by about 30 pins, whatever, they get an edge. That news breaks during that game, okay?
Yeah.
Odell Beckham goes to the Browns. The next game, what does Keith do? A career best game. What was your score?
256 for Keith.
Career best.
Wow.
256? Yeah. Like, mine's like a 120.
He just single-handedly put us away. They won. They moved on. So.
There you go. Congratulations to the geriatrics and Keith Lipscomb. I told Not Cool Keith, I said, you should have come to work today in full pads and a Browns helmet. He should have put the eye black under. He should have gone all in. Like, so I was texting some Browns fans last night. They couldn't believe it. Very, very exciting.
Like, I don't think any of us could have believed. So here's the thing about the Odell Beckham Jr. trade is we all knew it was possible. It had been floating around. Jake Glazer, who was on top of things, mentioned it at some point about a month or so ago. People thought that this could happen. They really did. And here we are, whatever it is, Tuesday night at like 7:30 or 8 o'clock, and it actually went down. So the same question comes to you guys. I'll start with you this time, Mike. Odell Beckham Jr., does his stock go up playing with Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns?
It's funny. I hit refresh after updating, after moving him from the Giants to the Browns, and our projections hit refresh. He didn't even move in the standings. He's still right in that mid-range QB1 sort of area. The projection changed a little bit, but I don't think it moves too much. I mean, his efficiency probably goes up a tiny bit going from Eli to Baker, but it's not like Eli had trouble getting him the football. He force-fed it to him. He got a lot of volume. The efficiency for Beckham was mostly fine. If I have a red flag with Beckham, it would have been regardless of which city he's in. And he's missed a lot of time. He's appeared in 16 games one time in his career. He's missed 16 games over the past two seasons. But I'll say this too. Baker Mayfield, I want to anoint the Browns. I want to anoint Baker. But we have to see it a little bit longer before you consider him an elite quarterback. He just hasn't done it over a long span yet. And by the way, he's averaging an interception a game, too. He needs to cut that down. So there's some reason for hesitancy here, but I still think Beckham's a stud, and he's their clear feature target. I think he's a mid-range wide receiver.
Maybe this is too anecdotal for me but let me say this. I think maybe the biggest part of this trade for Odell Beckham Jr. is just getting somewhere to where he wants to actually be. He just felt like a malcontent over the past year and a half, despite the fact that he made whatever it was between his signing bonus and his base salary, $30 million or whatever it was last year. Getting him into a place that he actually wants to be, that's a scary thought.
I thought where you were going with this, and it plays into that. Again, there's no stats to, but listen, it's not just a physical game. It is a mental game, and I don't think I'm speaking out of school to say that Odell Beckham is a player that plays emotionally, that plays with his emotions on his sleeve.
He's, no question.
And so going to Cleveland, where he will be reunited with his college teammate Jarvis Landry, who, as we saw from Hard Knocks, right, is an alpha dog.
Sure.
And Jarvis has been, active on social media. OBJ, come to Cleveland, And so I actually think being there with a veteran like Landry, with somebody that he trusts, that somebody he's close to, I think that will do a lot for Beckham's mental state. Also, just getting out of the New York media market, right? So he goes from New York where everyone's blaming everyone and, you know, every single thing is magnified to Cleveland, where I think there'll be a honeymoon period for a while. They're so happy that they have hope that the Browns have some stars. I mean, you think about Beckham, mm-hmm. you think about Baker Mayfield, like the Browns have legit stars. And so I'm more optimistic, Mike, than you or Field, I think, in terms of his fantasy value. I think it does take I think
you
can make an argument. I don't have him as the number one wide receiver, but I think if you took him number one, I wouldn't look at you weird. And I think you can make an argument for that. His last 16 games, if you look at the stats that he put up over his last 16 games, it would basically be wide receiver 8. In terms of on a points per game basis, right? So, he goes from Eli Manning, who was 31st in touchdown percentage, to Baker Mayfield, who was 11th. You think about Baker Mayfield. Once Freddie Kitchens took over as the offense coordinator in week 9, okay? Baker Mayfield was the 10th best quarterback in fantasy. He was second in yards per attempt. He was, he led the NFL in deep completions per game. He was second in deep attempts per game, 15 yards or deeper. Only Josh Allen had a higher rate of passes that were the deeper rider. 27.8% of Baker Mayfield's passes that he attempted from week 9 on were 15 yards or deeper. And so you think about Odell Beckham Jr., who is such a deep threat, and there's so many other weapons there in Cleveland, and they're certainly going to feed him. I think this is very exciting. He needs to,
sure.
But I think this, the mental piece of it and playing with a quarterback, I think there's a significant difference between what Baker Mayfield will be in year two than what Eli Manning's been the last couple of years, just in terms of the efficiency of the offense, the amount they'll be able to score, and honestly being able to run Nick Chubb into the middle line. And I think play action is going to be big for this team.
We're all in the same area, zip code mm-hmm. at the very least, with Odell Beckham Jr., but maybe Baker is a little bit more interesting. I got the question last night. Is Baker Mayfield a top 8 fantasy quarterback with all of the players they have
yes.
surrounded him with? Top 8.
So I have him at 7.
I'm not saying that as if you're crazy. Mike, agree? Top 8?
I do not have him top 8. Just
okay.
outside.
And that's
fringe
probably
top 10.
More of the depth of the quarterback.
Why do you hate
right?
Baker Mayfield?
He does nothing with his legs.
Yet.
And he throws a lot of interceptions so far. Now, he could cut down interceptions. He could start running more. But if you look through, I mean, again, if you're projecting this out using ESPN standard scoring, 4 points, passing touchdown, minus sure. 2 for a pick. And, you know, that obviously means that rushing the ball as a quarterback has a lot of extra value. Again, because it's 6 points for a rushing touchdown. You get 10 points for a 10 rushing yards is a point. That is important. That
sure.
matters. And the difference
sure.
between 400 rushing yards for Mitch Trubisky and a couple touchdowns and 100 for Baker Mayfield is significant and not something we can overlook. So that's why he gets knocked down a little bit. I hate it. I want him to be higher.
No, you hate. You're a hater. You're a hater. What do you got, Secret Squirrel? You're piping up over there.
I just have a question.
We'll get to Danny Amendola in a minute.
No,
don't worry.
I understand. I just want to know, with OBJ coming here and Jarvis Landry needing to be able to get a massive amount of touches to be, you know, because he's a short yardage kind of guy, David Njoku, and plus you've got all the running backs, who has the biggest fall off on this Browns offense from a fantasy perspective?
David Njoku. And I don't think it was very good last year, but like David Njoku, honestly, I have very mitigated expectations.
Yeah, Jarvis Landry didn't fall off as much as I thought. I still have him kind of a fringe top 25 guy. There's still
yep.
plenty of targets there, but I think Njoku will still be a fringe top 10. I think he
sure,
can get enough. I think
there's
enough
to go around. Is great.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's like Antonio Callaway. Like, he has no chance to take a big leap this year. I think he's the guy that kind of gets crushed the most.
It's interesting, although Antonio Callaway would be a great guy for best ball because, again, like, if they go 3 wide, right, and so Beckham's got double coverage on him. Like, Callaway is somebody that when I was at the combine, and this is something that did not make it into my little combine nuggets piece, but I heard from a couple of Brown sources about how excited they are about Antonio Callaway this year, who, you know, had an up and down season last year, but feels like they scaled him back a little bit. He really grasped that, and they're very excited about his potential. Obviously, he now takes a back seat to Beckham and Landry among the wide receivers. They also have Rashard Higgins there as well. But Callaway's one of those guys that I think would be interesting as a DFS tournament flyer.
20th round pick.
Yeah, and just like in a best ball kind of thing. Very quickly, just to wrap up on Baker, again, 10th best quarterback in fantasy from week 9 on, average 19 fantasy points a game. And I just think he takes a huge leap in year 2, now knowing he is the guy, having a full offseason with Freddie Kitchens and staff to really command. I mean, people forget he basically didn't get any reps under Hugh Jackson, was relegated to the number 2 role, and you know, was sort of learning on the fly, if you will. I mean, the one argument could be is that maybe the Browns, because they've also improved their defense, don't get into as many shootouts here, but just from the eye test, Baker Mayfield's a stud. And when you add Odell Beckham Jr. to a lot of talented position players around him and still a good offensive line, you know, listen, I think there's a small difference between QB7 and QB12 because the position, as always, is so deep. But yeah, to answer the question you were asked, Field, I have Baker Mayfield as a top eight fantasy quarterback.
All right, so a couple of other trades, not as significant. This one is sort of a medium range.
One last question before we move on. We didn't really just touch on this, but I just want to, with the Antonio Brown thing, Juju Smith-Schuster, to me, he raises up. I think he's a top five fantasy wide receiver now with Antonio Brown gone. If you look at sort of the numbers when Juju was, when Antonio Brown was out, and it's all super small sample size, but it was significant, right? I mean, I'm trying to look for my notes here. Can't really.
Well, you do that. I have him at 114 catches, second most. I have him at over 1400 yards, third most, and 9 touchdowns. I mean, in this high scoring Steelers offense, he set a franchise record for touchdowns last season. What? You knock that the Steelers. Even if you bring that down, there's still so much room for Smith-Schuster to have a huge season. So I'm with you.
He has 6 career games with 11 or more targets. In those 6 games, 5 of them went for 115 receiving yards or more. So sky's the limit, and all of a sudden, James Washington needs to be on your sleeper radar. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, certainly. When the Steelers have a developmental wide receiver, it catches your attention. Okay, the next tier of trade, sort of a medium tier, and then a kind of an afterthoughts tier. Sorry, Matthew, we'll get that in just a moment. But DeSean Jackson traded the Philadelphia Eagles back to where he started his career, back to where he never wanted to leave from. DeSean Jackson is one of those rare players that has aged really well, too, at the wide receiver spot, 33, but still runs like he did when he got into the league. It's an exchange of late round picks, so the compensation for Philly is really nothing. They just extended him for a couple of more seasons. I think it's 3 years and $27 million. Now headed to DeSean Jackson. Mike, I'll go back to you because you're a Philadelphia fan here first and foremost. This fills perhaps their biggest offensive need this offseason.
No question. They've been trying to fill this for a while now. They tried with Mike Wallace last offseason. He got injured, but now they bring this speed element back to the Eagles offense. So it's so huge. And this dot connect's been here since last year. I mean, they've been trying to trade for a deep threat. They looked at Kenny Stills. They tried Robbie Anderson. They finally get DeSean Jackson. Obviously, the efficiency is through the roof. Number one in yards per reception, yards per target since he came into the league. But I will say this. Here's the only red flag with DeSean Jackson. He doesn't stay on the field. In 11 seasons, he has 2 16-game regular seasons, which is incredible.
Yeah.
Misses a lot of time. So even if you get 13, 14 games out of him, that's probably a realistic target. When he's out there, he's going to be a deep threat, a playmaker. Good in best ball, obviously. Yes. I think that in regular drafts, regular redraft, season-long drafts, probably looking at him kind of late, right? Like a fringe flex option just inside the top 45, that kind of area. But all in all, it's probably a better move for the Eagles than it is in fantasy.
Completely agree. Better NFL move than fantasy move for DeSean Jackson. I think it helps Carson Wentz.
Sure.
I think it helps his value, obviously, getting a deep threat that will open up that offense. And certainly he's a guy that can take it to the house anytime he gets the ball in his hands. All that said, since 2014, sorry, last four seasons, DeSean Jackson has under 10 fantasy points in terms of PPR scoring in 48% of his games, almost half his games. He is the true definition of a boom or bust guy for me. So helps the Eagles NFL wise, helps Carson Wentz fantasy value. But again, I think he's better for DFS tournament play or best ball than he is necessarily a regular starter, for you in season long. I will say this is exciting for Chris Godwin now in Tampa Bay.
He feels like one of the biggest winners of the week from fantasy football perspective. Now, I know that if you look at the numbers in terms of when DeSean Jackson sat last year versus when Chris Godwin was healthy, him not on the field, like there are some up and down games. He had a couple of 100-yard games, and he had a couple of games where he went like one catch. He might have one of those one catch on 10 targets games. I think him and Mike Evans both had one of them. That being said, new offense, new system, unquestioned role, should be the number two wide receiver. Rashad Perriman will be the third wide receiver there in Tampa Bay, but you got to love the outlook now for Chris Godwin.
Yeah, check this out. 842 yards, 7 touchdowns last year, was a number 27 fantasy receiver. He was on the field for 57%, not of their snaps, of their pass plays. Half of their pass plays was still a top 30 fantasy receiver.
6 career games without an active Sean Jackson for Chris Godwin. 362 yards, 2 touchdowns, 42 targets in those 6 games. So, I mean, they were looking for him a lot when he's on the field. There was some inconsistency there, though, but you think Bruce Arians and that staff obviously know what they have in Chris Godwin. Big role. He's going to be a very trendy sleeper in the preseason, as well he should be.
All right, so a couple of quarterback trades. Case Keenum going to the Washington Redskins.
Let's just move on. Let's quickly just move on. Let's move on. Let's move
on.
Joe
Flacco going to the Denver Broncos. Honestly, guys, like, I don't think that either one of these is a major fantasy impact as far as we're concerned. Neither one of these players is one that you are trusting to be your starter. And honestly, I don't think that either one of them has a dramatic outlook on the skill guys on either side. In Washington, is there a single wide receiver you're even interested in as a daily or as a weekly fixture?
I mean, no. Late flyers. Paul Richardson, Trey Quinn,
Trey Quinn in a PPR. Super late flyers, deep leagues, again, best balls. I'm not convinced Case Keenum's their starter, by the way. They love Colt McCoy. Again, on the same podcast, when we talked to Jay Gruden, the head coach at the Combine, and you can listen to the podcast, you know, go through our archives. We played all the interviews, the full interviews, and we talked to general managers and head coaches and offense coordinators. Check them out. Lots of great stuff. But when we talked to Jay Gruden, I asked him point blank, is the starting quarterback of the Redskins on your roster right now? And he said, yes, Colt McCoy. And that was prior to the Case Keenum trade. He talked up Colt McCoy. That was prior to the Case Keenum trade. So right. I'm just saying, like, I don't think it is a given that Case Keenum is the starter. Like, I think it will be a true competition. And I think if Jay Gruden has his way, assuming health, Colt McCoy will be the starter.
Yeah. The only problem is, like, Jay Gruden saying, like, I think the starter's on the roster. Is like, Dave Gettleman also told us that they're not going to trade him.
He's going to say no.
Right.
No.
Quick, incredible note on Joe Flacco. 34 years old now.
Yeah.
He has never finished a season better than 10th in fantasy points a quarterback. So in case you're like, oh, maybe I'll take a late flyer. Don't do that. He's never finished better than 10th.
But if I had to pick one of them, I'd prefer Flacco to Keenum because Flacco definitely has a job and he's got better weapons around him. You know, I do like Deshaun Hamilton.
It's a quarterback draft.
But literally, I'm in a 12 team, it's a dynasty league, so it's a little bit different, but I'm in a 12 team super flex league, which is in essence a 2-quarterback league. And we're like in the 13th round right now and no one's taken Joe Flacco yet. I mean, you know, Nick Foles is gone, like all these guys. And I would agree. I don't think it affects any of those guys all that much. Flacco is basically Case Keenum.
You guys may have missed it, but a certain rapper announced his new team last night. We'll tell you about that right after this.
Tennessee, you in the 06-0-1-0.
Le'Veon Bell, remember him? He hasn't played an NFL game in like a year and a half.
Ooh, but I'm aware.
Le'Veon Bell is headed to the New York Jets. If you haven't seen the clip yet of Adam Schefter breaking this news on national TV during SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt at like 12:22, I guess that would be early Wednesday morning, go watch it. It's a cool clip, and Le'Veon Bell is heading to the one team that we all suspected would be most heavily invested in this market. And we've got Le'Veon Bell to Sam Darnold, to Jamison Crowder. We can talk about some of the other Jets weapons in a minute here. But, Matthew, this was, for a long time, the preeminent player in fantasy football because running backs are hard to find, and he was a unicorn in some ways. Is he still that player, and can he still be that player in New York with the Jets?
Yes-ish. Look, there's a lot of red flags here that I don't think... So here's to answer your question on a positive way, could he? Sure. Because volume is king in fantasy football, and the expectation is he's going to get a ton of it there in New York, and it's an emerging offense. Darnold looked good down the stretch. They made a couple of nice moves. Jamison Crowder, I thought, was a nice addition as well to the passing offense. So we'll talk about that. All that said, there's some red flags here. He's been out of football for a year.
Yeah.
Right? There's being in shape, and then there's being in football shape. So we'll see. We don't know what kind of shape he is in. We don't know if he's in football shape. There's definitely going to be some rust. Sam Darnold, no matter how much improvement he makes from year one to year two, he ain't Ben Roethlisberger at his peak. And the Jets, no matter how many great moves they make this offseason, are not going to be the Antonio Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster Steelers of Le'Veon Bell's heyday, you know, whatever, the last time we saw him on a field, 2017. That offense isn't going to be as efficient. It's not going to score as much. Also, you think about Adam Gase, right? Adam Gase is not a guy that, if you look at his career, both as a head coach and as an offense coordinator is not a guy that passes to the running back all that much. Now, he's never had a guy like Le'Veon Bell, but remember, he had Matt Forte in Chicago. He had Sean Moreno in Denver. Like, he had Kenyon Drake. He's had decent pass catching running backs under his coaching. And the fact is that Gase has never really thrown in his entire career as an offense coordinator, as head coach. He has never been better than 20th. He's only been better than 20th once in his entire career in terms of pass catches to a running back. And that year was 2013, the Peyton Manning year, which I think you can throw out. That's not what it is. Every other year, he's been 20th or worse in terms of amount of passes attempted to a running back. Now, again, you've got Le'Veon Bell here, but still, I think you have to be slightly concerned here, especially because, by the way, Le'Veon Bell is somebody who has missed 18 games in his NFL career, not counting last year. Prior to 2017, between suspension and injury, he's missed 18 NFL games, and now he's a year removed from football.
Mike, yeah. I'm more concerned with your thoughts on his rap album than fantasy insight, but I feel like most people prefer your fantasy insight. Your thoughts on Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, well, let's save that for a different podcast. Okay, maybe ESPN the Minus show. Maybe we'll do it there.
Yeah. ESPN we'll Music Podcast. Daniel produces that,
there you
too.
Go. Yeah. Done. We'll do that. All right, here's my concerns. I'm not really worried about the target share, and I'll tell you why. Last year, Kenyon Drake had a 17% target share. That can all go to Bell, as far as I'm concerned. I don't see why it wouldn't. So I think he'll be fine in that department, not worried about that. If I do have a concern, really it's two, it would be Adam Gase's play calling near the goal line. Now, here's the thing. Bell has never really been a high rushing touchdown guy. He's never eclipsed 9 in a season. He's actually never gotten more than 9 carries inside the opponent's 5-yard line in his career, believe it or not. But Adam Gase, you look at his 3 seasons in Miami, he ranked dead last in carries inside the 5. His running backs had 23 carries inside the 5 during his 3 seasons. The next closest team had 39. It wasn't even close. So he doesn't run the ball near the goal line. That's a little bit of a concern. The other is, the last time we saw him, you know, it was easy to overlook because he got such massive volume. He was first in snaps, first in carries, first in pass routes, first in catches, finished second in scrimmage yards and fantasy points, and ended up obviously being a terrific fantasy running back. But it was so volume-based because his efficiency, yards per carry, yards per reception, yards per target, all actually a little below average. So now there's been a season off. He's coming off kind of a pedestrian efficiency season, going to a lower scoring offense. I think you add it all up and you're a little worried about the rushing touchdowns, but overall, I don't really care because the volume is going to be so massive. He's going to get maybe 270 carries and 70 catches. That's going to lead to a kind of a mid-pack running back one season, if not even higher.
Well, listen, we agree there because, I mean, I have him as a mid-tier, lower, RB1, right? You know, still within my top 10. We'll get into that one in a second. But just to two concerns about Gase that, one is that the pace of play. I mean, he has traditionally been a very slow pace of play. So in terms of like, you know, which is not something that was, you know, Pittsburgh obviously played at a high level. So I think you're looking at less possessions for Le'Veon Bell. I get you with the touches, but just to push back a little bit on your target share there, Le'Veon Bell. I mean, the fact is that once again, even including a 17% target share for Kenyon Drake, okay? Last year, Miami, only once in his 6 years as a coach, a Gase-led offense has ranked 20th or better in running back receptions. So, I mean, they were outside the top 20. So, So check this out, right? 2015, Matt Forte was a top 8 fantasy running back with Adam Gase as the offense coordinator, okay? But even in that season, even when Matt Forte had a great fantasy season, and the 2 seasons prior to Gase coming there, 2013, 2014, he averaged 5.5 catches per game. This is Matt Forte. Under Adam Gase in 2015, he averaged 3.4 catches per game. So even in a game, even in a year in which Matt Forte had a good fantasy season, he was running back 8 that year, he still had less pass catches than he had the previous 2 seasons on Gase for whatever reason. And I'm with you. You pay a player like Le'Veon Bell and you know that's a big part of his game. I'm not saying they're not going to pass it to Le'Veon Bell, but do I think he gets 90 receptions? You know, 85 receptions, you know, kind of these crazy numbers that he's had in the past. I don't. And that was a big part of his value in Pittsburgh. I mean, like, where did you project him at it for receptions?
Yeah, I have him at, I think it's 74, something, somewhere in that range, which is fine. I mean, that's going to put him
at,
it's fine, but would it shock you if he came in at 60? At 55?
I'd be pretty surprised.
Yeah,
I'd
be surprised if he comes
55.
In that low.
Yeah. I made this point with Antonio Brown earlier, is it's like when we're trying to fit players into a new system, part of it is have they ever had a player of anywhere close to his caliber right. in the system. Mm-hmm. And to be clear, by the way, I think we should know that for the Jets, their GM, Mike Maccagnan, basically had a directive. You better make this team a lot better on paper going into next season because your job was almost on the line this past year. So I think he went out there and said, we'll worry about the talent and the fit. You know, we'll worry about the talent. We'll figure out the fit as we go along. But I really do believe that Le'Veon Bell might have, like, who else are they going to hand the ball off to or throw it to next year?
Yeah, they're going to cut Isaiah Crowell, by the way. Eli McGuire and Trenton Cannon are the other running backs.
Yeah.
So here is a question for you. Then, once again, I will tell you, you tell me, I'm going to name a running back. We're playing quick name game here. You tell me if you would draft this running back ahead of Le'Veon Bell next year.
Okay.
Saquon Barkley.
Of course.
Yes.
Yes, I agree. Ezekiel Elliott.
Yes.
Yes.
Christian McCaffrey.
Yes.
Yes.
We're all in agreement here. Alvin Kamara.
Yep.
Yeah.
James Conner.
No.
I don't know.
I want Conner over Le'Veon Bell.
Really? I'm going Bell.
Okay.
I'm leaning towards Bell as well. Yeah.
All right. Melvin Gordon.
That's close.
I'm going to go Bell. I'm going Bell. A close call.
Yeah. I'm going Melvin Gordon there. Todd Gurley.
Gurley. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
So for Barkley, Zeke, Gurley, McCaffrey, Kamara, so at least five running backs. I have Gordon and Connor ahead of Le'Veon Bell right now. I'll throw out a couple other. David Johnson.
Bell.
I'll take Le'Veon Bell.
I have Bell higher.
Yeah. You have Bell sixth. Joe Mixon?
Still Le'Veon Bell.
I agree.
Bell.
Dalvin Cook?
Bell.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree. So
you're not going to say anyone else.
Dalvin Cook ever again after understood. Last year's disappointment.
So you guys have Le'Veon Bell basically as running back six. I have him as running back eight. Again, I prefer Connor and Gordon in the same situation, same team. We've seen it more recently. Younger guys than Le'Veon Bell. There are red flags there. You guys will acknowledge that, though, around Le'Veon Bell.
Sure.
Of course. Yeah, no question. I mean, you mentioned that right at the beginning, Matthew. He hasn't played in over a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, there are legitimate concerns about what kind of athlete he will, not the player will be, but the kind of athlete will be when he shows up on the field at some point here this spring for the New York Jets.
And 50% of people will tell you he'll be rusty. The other 50 will tell you he's fresh. So,
unless you've researched that,
there's nothing to learn from
that. No, there isn't. But I will say in terms of where he's going in overall drafts, I think what I said on SportsCenter this morning, and it sounds like you guys sort of agree, you're a little bit more bullish on him than I am, but I said end of the first round, early second.
Yep.
It's where I think Le'Veon Bell goes.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Matthew, must have been nice to be on a...
Big
Sports
time.
Center this morning.
Sports Center. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to brag, but I was on ESPN2, 9 a.m., part of the basic cable package. Thank you
Way
very much.
Way to go, Matthew Berry.
You know, normally I'm on pay internet, but yeah, I was on TV this morning. No
Perfect
big deal.
Segue wow. here NBD. To move on to our next player, Mark Ingram, who is headed to the Baltimore Ravens. He's not returning to the Saints as a result of that. 3 years, $15 million for Mark Ingram. The Ravens have had an exodus of talent this offseason, most of it on the defensive side of the ball, but this one makes a ton of sense, Mike. This feels like the kind of player that if you look at how this roster is constructed on offense, it feels like they want to be a team that just wears you out, and Mark Ingram is a big, powerful guy to do that.
No question. 230, that's his career high in carries that came back in 2017 would not shock me at all if he passed that out this year because that could be with less than half of their designed runs because they're going to run the ball as often as they can. You have Lamar Jackson's going to handle a quarter of those, maybe up to 30% of the designed runs, and they're going to mix in Gus Edwards. There's still room for him to clear 100 carries, a little bit of Kenneth Dixon, but that leaves more than enough for Ingram to go over 200 carries, probably catches 30 to 40 footballs. Very talented, very efficient. Yes, he's near that age 30 mark now, but he's been effective, and he's situated as their clear lead back there and one of the probably the run heaviest offense in the NFL.
To your point, Mike, starting in week 11 when Lamar Jackson took over, from weeks 11 through 17, the Ravens ranked third in running back carries per game, first in running back rushing yards, and first in yards per carry. And again, that was with mostly Gus Edwards basically there and a couple other guys mixed in. So Mark Ingram, who we think is an improvement, no disrespect to Gus Edwards, but Mark Ingram, a clear improvement there, yes, and the way they're paying him, he should get the bulk of the work. Don't necessarily love Ingram in Dynasty. Again, to your point, 29 years old and is going to get a ton of work this year. But in redraft leagues, I think he is a solid RB2 and somebody who gets a little bit of a boost in non-PPR leagues.
I'm a little lower. I think he's more of a flex option.
Really?
Just because, you know, if you get into that 30-35 catch area that I just talked about, and just, I mean, look at everybody else that he's competing against. You know, guys like... your guy, Darius Geis. Damian Williams, James White, and Sony Michel, Henry, Mack, Carson, Lindsley, Cohen, even Lamar Miller, Shady McCoy, all these guys are in that area. You know, are they ahead of him, or is he above those guys? Even we if could he's play in the middle, you know, we're, that's outside the top 20. Most of those guys are outside the top 20.
Yeah, I like him more than a decent amount of those guys just because I think the volume will be there. Again, I think higher in non-PPR than he is in PPR.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I think he's a solid RB2. I think there's probably a little bit of a ceiling there, but there's definitely a very high floor. And so some of the other guys you mentioned are either in timeshares or have question marks, guys coming off the injury, for example. So,
did you say something negative about Darius Geis?
Wow. Yeah, that's right.
Listen, you know me. I love Darius Geis. I'll have Geis ranked higher than Ingram, but that's me. I'm irrational about Darius Geis.
I think the only reason why I'm a bit lower on Mark, Ingram is you mentioned maybe the lack of catches, Mike. So more like 30 to 35.
Yeah, I think
I'll
be in that range, yeah.
But moreover, remember last year, this narrative developed that like Lamar Jackson turned this season around. No. They were terrible in terms of offensive output. They were 30th, I believe,
yeah,
Mike, in
1.9
total
touchdowns per game.
Think about that. 1.9 yeah. touchdowns per game. Like yeah, the scoring opportunities are much lower for Mark Ingram in Baltimore than New Orleans.
But they played that way on purpose. I mean, they slowed it down.
They probably did the same thing this year,
yeah,
right?
You would think so, although you would think that Jackson takes a step forward, that they'll tailor their offense around him even more and that he comes in.
Or maybe defenses are more prepared for Jackson, as we saw in the playoff game. The second time around for the Chargers,
they've lost some people, but, adding Earl Thomas, like, Baltimore's going to try to win games 16-13. So I would agree with you.
Moving along, there will be
less offensive opportunity.
The player that is replacing Mark Ingram in New Orleans is Latavius Murray, former Vikings running back. Gets 4 years, I believe, $14 million to go to New Orleans. Not an identical player, but in a lot of ways, very much the guy that Mark Ingram was there, Matthew. Guy that played really well 2 seasons ago after Dalvin Cook's initial injury. I know he's not a particularly sexy back in fantasy football, but he's probably going to get some opportunities to score in this offense.
Last 4 seasons, Latavius Murray ranks 4th in red zone rushing touchdowns. He's 1 ahead of Mark Ingram. Only LeGarrette Blount, Todd Gurley, David Johnson are ahead of Latavius Murray. He's converted red zone rushes into touchdowns 19.9% of the time. Again, this is over the last 4 seasons. Better than Melvin Gordon and Le'Veon Bell, just to throw a couple of big names. He's just behind Mark Ingram at 20.3%. So, yeah, I mean, I think he comes into that role. Listen, it's not going to be 1A and 1B. This is Alvin Kamara's job, but Latavius Murray becomes one of, if not the most valuable handcuff in fantasy, and somebody that could, like, again, you talk about best ball. He's a guy that we could look up at the end of the year and have 8 touchdowns. That just because of the way that offense runs and that they like to use their backs at the goal line. So I think Murray is probably more valuable for whoever drafts Kamara than as a standalone talent. Unless something were to happen to Kamara, but I think he will have some standalone value in deeper leagues.
Yeah, obviously stepping into the Ingram role, as you mentioned, I think he'll see a little bit less work, I think, than Ingram did, and yep. Kamara will pick up a little bit more work. If you look at his rushing efficiency, he's been incredibly pedestrian or average throughout his career. It's almost incredible how average he's been throughout the past few
very
years.
Very mediocre. He should be our official running back.
That would be perfect, actually. But with the area where he has...
I'd get a tattoo.
You'd get a tattoo.
Yeah, why not?
But the area where he has stood out really has been at the goal line.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, you look back at since 2015, this is kind of crazy. I don't think people realize this. Second in the NFL in rushing touchdowns with 32. Fourth in rushing OTD, just under 28. Essentially, his opportunity to score touchdowns where an average player would be. Fifth in carries inside the 5 with 40. And actually, again, since 2015, the number 10 scoring fantasy running back because of all that volume he's gotten in early downs and, of course, the touchdown. So, again, I think you kind of laid it out perfectly. He's an elite handcuff, maybe in non-PPR, has some deep league flex appeal, but that's about it.
Yeah, I think when you have New Orleans in front of your name, it's always a good thing. So mm-hmm. The Saints' offense projects to be excellent again next year. Another offense.
Before you move on, one last thing, though. Alvin Kamara has 17 games with at least 15 touches. In those games, he's averaging 26 fantasy points per game. Last year, Todd Gurley, the number one running back on a points per game basis, at 26.6. So Alvin Kamara, to me, I think you could make an argument for him as high as 3. I don't have him that high. I have him at 5, but I think you could make, after Barkley and Zeke, like if you want to take Kamara instead of Todd Gurley, if you want to take him instead of Christian mm-hmm. McCaffrey, I think you can very easily make that argument.
I think you can make the case for 2. One's probably pushing it now because Beckham's right. gone. Like Barkley's going to get an insane number of touches.
Insane volume.
He's so good. But I think 2, you can make the case.
Yeah.
Moving along here to a wide receiver that got massive money on a one-year deal. Devin Funchess got a $10 million
deal. Field Yates money, Mike Clay, is what that was.
I think you may have things just a little bit misconstrued, Matthew, Mr. Big Checks over there. Devin Funchess gets
I follow your Instagram.
$10 million, thank you. Touché. Shout out to @FieldYates on Instagram. $10 million for Devin Funchess, $13 million max. Felt like a huge number, and the Colts have been this team that's kind of just lurking, right? They've got all this cap space. They've got some need, but they made massive strides last year. You figured they could be busy buyers. Instead, they end up with a player in Devin Funchess, who I think fills a need here. Mike, the question, though, is like, how good of a player is Devin Funchess right now?
Yeah, big need for sure. He's only 24 years old. You know, he's 6'4", obviously has a ton of size. We saw last season the Colts take a guy that had been inefficient his entire career in Eric Ebron. They bring him in and turn him into a major weapon near the goal line. They could do a little bit of that with Devin Funchess. But in terms of reclamation projects, I mean, getting Funchess to bounce back after what was a disastrous 2018, I mean, is there a better scenario to go to a high-scoring Colts offense with Andrew Luck that's needy at wide receiver? He's going to be the favorite right now to be the number two receiver in a great situation here for sure. And I will say this. You look back at his career so far, 24.4% of his targets have been off target. That's the fourth highest mark in the NFL. So obviously Cam Newton had some troubles getting him the football. Andrew Luck last season, 13.3% of his throws off target, sixth best at the quarterback position. Obviously a significant upgrade at quarterback in terms of passing the ball. Cam's awesome, don't get me wrong. But in terms of throwing accuracy and ability, Luck is clearly an upgrade. Maybe this is his chance to bounce back. So I like him as a flyer. There's obviously some upside. You could apply that to Deion Kane too, some other guys, but maybe, you know, maybe there's a chance he could bounce back. He's still very young.
So, Matthew, last year, Dante Moncrief got this massive deal in free agency for 1 year, and everybody is sort of comparing these two deals from a money standpoint. But to Mike's point, it's one thing, with all due respect to Blake Bortles, to go from Indianapolis and Andrew Luck to Blake Bortles versus the inverse, right? Go from Cam Newton, who is obviously a way better quarterback than Blake Bortles. But Andrew Luck, we would agree, is the best thrower out of the three. Is there a resurrection narrative coming our way with Devin Funchess?
I think there could be. I think Mike's points about the off-target percentage is really well taken, right? In his four-year career, Funchess has only caught 52% of his career targets. And again, that's some of that is Cam Newton. So, I mean, Luck over the last 4 years, 12th in off-target percentage, Cam Newton 36th, right? In terms of his off-target percentage on deep passes, Andrew Luck ranked 9th in the NFL, Cam Newton ranked 31st. And Luck's off-target percentage in the red zone, he ranked 6th over the last 4 years. Newton ranked 15th. So, I mean, pick a stat, and Mike gave you some other ones that were great as well. But Andrew Luck, a bunch of numbers to tell you what you know from just watching these games. Andrew Luck, much more accurate than Cam Newton. It's an offense that I think will score more points as well. You mentioned the size as well. I thought this was interesting. Thirsty Kyle dug up this stat. 40.9% of Andrew Luck's career touchdown passes have gone to a player standing at least 6'3", which is a pretty high rate considering neither Reggie Wayne nor T.Y. Hilton is that tall, right? And maybe that speaks somewhat obviously to his love of tight ends, but he hasn't really had a big target like Devin Funchess at the wide receiver position. And so again, to your point, this is a guy that wasn't Devin Funchess a number one pick? I believe he was a first rounder.
Devin Funchess was a second rounder. 51st overall, maybe?
Yeah, wow. Maybe mid second round. Okay. Sorry. I was confusing him with Kelvin Benjamin. That's right. Kelvin Benjamin was a first rounder. The next year Devin Funchess was a second rounder. But somebody that was highly thought of coming out of college, Devin Funchess, again, still only 24, has had success in the NFL, not consistent, but has had success at the NFL. And the last thing I will say here is if there's somebody that you're going to give the benefit of the doubt to, it's Chris Ballard, based on what they've done in Indianapolis over the past year. So Chris Ballard, looking at his team, and as of this point, as of this writing, the Colts haven't taken that many shots in free agency. So the fact that Chris Ballard, with his track record, with what they did with the offensive line and in the draft and everything that they've done since he came to Indianapolis, I think you have to give him the benefit of the doubt on Devin Funchess and think this is a pretty interesting flyer.
Let's play a little bit of rapid fire here with the rest of these players. None of them necessarily have the same caliber in terms of fantasy impact. The largest contract, though, in terms of average annual value goes to Nick Foles, who, surprise, is now a Jacksonville Jaguar.
Yeah, this is a big deal. This is a big news. Wide news. Girthy news, even.
Okay, Mike, your thoughts on the girthy news that Nick Foles is now a Jacksonville Jaguar.
Yeah, this hurts. I'm going to be a little negative here in terms of potential fantasy value. That hurts because he actually wrote in the Players Tribune today a nice note to us Eagles fans.
Do you think it was like directly to you?
It was to me mostly, but also other Eagles fans. But nonetheless, I love Nick Foles. Obviously, brought us a Super Bowl ring. Love that. But
your only Super Bowl. Just to point out.
That's accurate.
The Eagles' only Super Bowl. I just want to point that out.
Oh, yeah, and he brings a lot of energy. Like, he's got a lot of, like, that
a lot of energy.
Energy is like a
He
real
brings a
thing.
Lot of energy. It's big.
The Redskins
it's big, the amount of energy
he brings.
The
Redskins have a bottom
Decker-sized
five.
Energy.
Decker-sized energy is a good way to put it. Yeah.
The Redskins have a bottom five roster right now. Anyway, Nick Foles.
And three Super Bowl rings. We got three Super Bowl rings. You guys could win the Super Bowl this year and still have less Super Bowl rings than my Washington Redskins.
Hey,
just pointing that out.
I'll
just saying.
Listen, I'm all about the now. I'll take our roster right now. I'm happy. But here's the thing. We all know about that one season Nick Foles had. 27 touchdowns, two picks. Was terrific. Finished 11th in fantasy points. That's actually his only season he's ever finished better than 29th. But since that season, yes, he's had the magic of the run to the Super Bowl. He's been terrific at times in the playoffs. But since that season, he's had 35 touchdowns, 26 interceptions in 34 regular season games. Only two, this is kind of incredible, two weekly finishes better than 16th over the past three seasons. Two better than 16th. He hasn't really been a good fantasy quarterback for a very long time. And listen, I know he was Carson Wentz's backup for a lot of that, but at times he was in there and he was very inconsistent. He just was not registering big games. Last year, a lot of turnovers, had more interceptions than games played, four fumbles.
Right.
So when all is said and done, it's a run-heavy offense in Jacksonville. I think he's a bottom-end fantasy quarterback.
I would agree with that. He's a two-quarterback league play or a deep league play. Mm-hmm. If at anything, he'll probably be like, again, maybe a best ball or somebody you use in a DFS tournament, given the right matchup. But one thing that I think is interesting, past two seasons, including the playoffs, Nick Foles has completed over 70% of his passes to the slot with a 3-to-1 touchdown to interception rate when targeting the slot, right? So I just think it's sort of interesting when you think about D.D. Westbrook, who was, had 85 targets from the slot, over 620 yards, over almost 60% of Jacksonville slot yards. I think D.D. Westbrook is an interesting sleeper next year, given Nick Foles and how well he's played so far in targeting slot guys. We saw that some as well. We saw Alshon Jeffrey's, numbers go down when Foles came in at the end of this year. We saw Aguilar and Golden Tate go up a little bit. Zach Ertz, obviously, as well out of the slot. So, anyway, I think D.D. Westbrook, who's a nice little player, and is somebody I kind of like as a sleeper this year with the Nick Foles signing.
It's not far enough removed from the last season for me to have any confidence in any Jaguars, any player, really, I guess, except for Leonard Fournette, who we assume will be back in Jacksonville next year. A couple of running backs of note here, and let's go to Mike Davis, who now is a Chicago Bear, former Seahawks runner, previously was also with the 49ers. 2 years, $6 million, one of those deals that's not nearly as savory on the surface as other deals like Le'Veon Bell, etc. But this is a good player here, I think, Mike, and there's been some buzz that maybe the Jordan Howard time is nearly over. Adam Schefter reported that during the combine, teams called Chicago about the possibility of trading for Jordan Howard.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible Davis comes in as their number three running back, much like he was in Seattle, but I think the writing's on the wall. I think probably maybe in the next few days, if not, maybe it happened now while we're talking or during the draft, Jordan Howard will be traded away. Mike Davis, 4.6 yards per carry last season. That showed up on tape as well. He's a very effective player. And if they do trade Howard and they don't add a big-time running back in the draft, I think you'll see a lot of Tariq Cohen with Davis kind of the 1B there.
Yep.
Not going to lead to a ton of fantasy value, maybe a bunch of touchdowns, but we'll see what they do. I could see them being a team that moves on from Howard, drafts somebody in the third or fourth round, puts them with Cohen and Davis and uses a committee. So I'm not too excited about Davis right now.
Yeah, and I think there's still some dominoes to fall. Like, could you see somebody like Isaiah Crowell, if he gets released by the Jets, them picking him up on the cheap, or some of those guys, like, had Frank Gore not signed with the Bills, like, you could have seen. Anyway, they'll get some sort of stopgap there, but I agree. The running back you're going to want in Chicago this year is Tariq Cohen.
A little bit of breaking news here I'm going to mention. Sorry, Daniel, I don't know if you saw it or not, but Matthew, congratulations. Yeah. Adrian Peterson re-signing, two-year deal. That was not the reaction I was expecting.
With the Washington Redskins?
Yes, with you. Re-signing.
I want my little Darius guys, but honestly, like, if Colt McCoy and Case Keenum are under center, they need to run it 40 times a game.
You need a contingency plan with Darius.
I was
going
to say, Darius guys feels like you got to have definitely need to have a contingency plan on that one, right?
Adrian Peterson was nothing short of fantastic last year. Truly a great season. And by all accounts, beloved in that locker room. I understand there's other people have different feelings about Adrian Peterson. I understand that. I will just tell you that from what I hear, that he's very well respected within the locker room with the Redskins and a good teammate. That was the report this year. And so I think that's listen, I don't even know what the terms are, but,
2 years, $8 million is what we are, sounds like right now.
That makes me think
they'll probably, which is good for him probably, but they'll probably take it easy on Darius Geis early on, especially, which obviously hurts his fantasy value. We just talked about all them guys in that RB2 range. I think this knocks him down a few pegs.
I would agree.
Yeah, my thing with Darius Geis is, like, I just don't know, like, I think Stefania's given us enough pause with things that she said. Like, we're talking about Darius Geis, if he's going to be back to 100% and fully ready to go. And I know that Jay Gruden had nice things to say about him on the podcast at the Combine. I think with me and Darius Geis, like, I'll feel a lot more comfortable come May or April.
Yeah.
And maybe even into the end of OTA's minicamp.
Given how well Peterson played last year, I think this is a no-brainer for both the Redskins and candidly Peterson, who, you know, the Redskins gave him a chance and gave him a home, and he played well.
Yeah.
So, and he's close with Trent Williams as well. So, anyway, good. I'm glad. Happy to have Peterson back.
And if he does start slow and even have a weak season this year coming back, guys, I would stay patient. He turns 22 in four months.
Sure, no
he's
question.
Still super young. So
Darius Geis.
Yes. It could be a while. Yeah, certainly not Adrian Peterson. He's 34.
No, I still like Geis in dynasty leagues.
Yeah,
still
love Geis. Hold tight even until he gets through this.
All right, so Carlos Hyde is now a Kansas City Chief. This one actually took place before free agency began. Because Hyde had been cut by the Jaguars, he was able to sign somewhere right away. The Chiefs add Carlos Hyde to complement Damian Williams. I guess the question here is, Matthew, when I say complement, do you think that means like share the workload, or do you think it means back him up?
I think it means like, oh, Damian, you're awesome. Oh, Damian, that's a fresh outfit. Oh, Damian, I love those beats you're dropping.
That kind of compliment.
That compliment. That's what I mean. Like, yo, I love those shoes.
Dropping? Was he a rapper? Like,
yeah, just like, or whatever. He had music that he was playing in the locker room earlier. Yeah, that kind of thing. Like, whoa, that's a dope outfit. Oh, man, you're so awesome at Fortnite. Those kind of compliments.
I learned more about Damian Williams in the past 30 seconds than I ever knew.
That's what I think, compliment. I put this out on the Twitter there and on the Instagram here, but the running back two under Andy Reid has not been particularly fantasy relevant. Basically, finishing outside the top 48 pretty much every year since 2009, right? And so there's a couple of weird years last year, obviously, with Kareem Hunt leaving the team. And then you think about 2015 when Jamal Charles missed 11 games and Charcandrick West took over. But in general, the number two running back on an Andy Reid offense doesn't get enough volume to be fantasy relevant. I think this is Damian Williams' job. I think they wanted some depth there. You know, and Andy Reid talked about this at the Combine, and we actually did it on the fantasy show. I asked him directly about his running backs and how he likes to have guys in certain roles. But the expectation here is that I think Damian Williams is going to be the Chiefs running back you want.
Yeah, I think so. I agree with that. I think Williams is the top guy. I think this knocks him more down to the mid to back end running back two. So whatever. I have him handling about half of the carries. Hyde would be about a third of the carries, and then Williams certainly gets an edge in the pass catching department. But my impression from the Combine was the Chiefs don't see Williams as a feature back. Like, he was forced into those duties down the stretch, but they want to keep him in that, you know, maybe 10 to 12 touch sort of range, which could be a little bit problematic. And Hyde, by the way, just keep in mind, Damian Williams did not run the ball well in Miami. He was a good, you know, blocker, pass catching specialist, averaged 3.5 yards per carry, goes to Kansas City, was explosive, 5.1 yards per carry. We've seen Andy Reid maximize running backs. And I know Carlos Hyde has really dropped off in efficiency after a strong start to his career in recent seasons, but I think he still has some juice left. He's 27 years old. He goes to this Pat Mahomes-led offense, his Andy Reid offense. Would not surprise me if he outplays Williams. Would not shock me at all.
He certainly wouldn't surprise me as well. As we just talked about Latavius Murray being a super valuable handcuff. So is Carlos Hyde as well. Mm-hmm. It is worth noting, though, just in complete transparency, there is no bigger Carlos Hyde homer than Mike Clay. Yeah, I mean, the majority of his basement is Mark Martin, but there is a little Carlos Hyde corner in Mike Clay's basement. So just in full transparency, you love Carlos Hyde the way I love Darius Geis.
That's true. I have Jordan Howard there too. Like, I like them big yards after contact guys. So I'm not biased. I wouldn't say that, but I like the guy for a reason.
All right,
but
let's live life in the fast lane here for a few more. We got just a couple of minutes left, but obviously plenty of names to get to. So this is really, really rapid fire. Mike, Frank Gore goes to Buffalo. Any threat at all to LeSean McCoy's status as a fringe, like top 20 running back?
I don't think
fringe
so.
Fringe top 18 running back?
I think he'll be the backup, 8 to 10 touches. No real fantasy value there.
Matthew.
Just drains LeSean McCoy. Just makes it a more muddled.
Zero rushing touchdowns last year for Gore. Amazing.
But he's like 57 years old and he still plays in the NFL, which is pretty cool. Amazing. Danny Amendola goes to Detroit. They get more handsome Matthew. Do they also get more productive? Does he have fantasy value there?
I don't believe so, because I think they're going to be really run heavy. To me, Kenny Galladay is the only wide receiver. Marvin Jones will have some value, but I'm down on Matthew Stafford. I'm down on this passing offense as a whole under Daryl Bevel. Like, I think it's going to be Kenny Galladay, and then I think a drop off till you get to a Detroit pass catcher that you're excited about.
Adam Humphries goes to Tennessee, Mike.
Would you agree with that, Mike?
I think Galladay and Jones will be okay. Starters, Amendola, not interested in. Yeah. Humphries, yeah.
4 years, $36 million bucks, Mike. That is a reflection of a player that I think on paper the Titans have high hopes for.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're going to see Corey Davis be the feature target. Targets come down a little bit from last year. Delanie Walker's back, so don't forget, he's a great player. I mean, I know he's older, but he signed an extension. He'll be busy. And then Adam Humphries, third in line, maybe near that 20% share. Not super excited. He's not going to be a touchdown force, but more of a flex option, I think, in PPR.
Better NFL move for the Titans than necessarily a fantasy move for Adam Humphries. Mariota, by the way, Mariota has not been great throwing to the slot in his NFL career. Now, you could argue that they really haven't had anyone, with the exception of maybe Delanie Walker, but, you know, at the tight end position, they haven't really had a great slot receiver there, but still, he has not been super effective to that point so far in his career, last 2 years.
John Smokey Brown goes to Buffalo, 3 years, $27 million, and Cole Beasley going there as well, Matthew. A pair of wideouts for Josh Allen. John Brown can fly. Josh Allen can sling it. Seems like a pretty interesting match on paper, kind of what Robert Foster did last year, just a better player.
Yeah, I think that is interesting. But again, I thought this was a better NFL move than necessarily fantasy move. I think John Brown is going to be one of those guys that, like, I don't know that you're going to feel like he's going to get consistent target share. It's one that I want to see more as we see some preseason. I could see him moving up. But again, Josh Allen chucked it deep, but he wasn't particularly accurate when chucking it deep. I mean, that's always been one of the issues with Allen. We'll see if that improves in his game here. I thought this was a good move for Buffalo, but fantasy wise, I think he's a wide receiver four that is better off in best ball or DFS tournaments than necessarily season long as a starter.
Yeah, I'd go even lower. I hear you. I'm worried about them rotating between these four receivers, and I think that's going to be a problem. I have Brown with 41 catches. That's it.
Was kind of feeling good about Zay Jones at the end of last year. He actually played pretty well amidst really poor circumstances, but he may not be the number one guy that we thought he had at least a sliver of hope to be next year. Jamison Crowder goes to the Jets. Mike, follow the trail here, right? He goes to play for Adam Gase. Adam Gase has always loved to have a slot receiver he could trust. Adam Gase has a relationship with Peyton Manning, has a relationship with David Cutcliffe, the coach at Duke, who coached Jamison Crowder. It all makes sense. This could be a pretty useful signing for Sam Darnold.
Again, I think another PPR flex sort of guy, and here's the reason. Robbie Anderson, he's tendered at second round level. He'll be back most likely. Quincy Enunwa, they signed to an expensive deal last year. Chris Herndon, I like a lot. He's going to be busy. And then you bring in Le'Veon Bell, who's going to catch probably 70 passes. There's a lot of mouths to feed. I'm optimistic about the Jets right now. You have some work to do on defense, but I think Sam Darnold's looked pretty good down the stretch, could make a big leap. But again, I think Crowder, just the way he's used, not going to get a ton of goal line work, kind of capped in terms of his value.
Since 2016, he does have 12 slot touchdowns, Jamison Crowder does. That's tied for fifth among qualified wide receivers. He's caught 65.5% of his targets in the slot. Crowder's a nice little player. Needs to stay on the field, but I was not surprised to see him go from Washington, but I was sad to see him go. Jay Gruden mentioning Trey Quinn, who is likely going to be the starter at the slot for Washington. If you want a deep PPR name for you, Trey Quinn in Washington. But I agree with Mike on the fantasy prospects of Jamison Crowder, but I thought that was a nice move for the Jets, and I think a PPR flex is a good call there.
It's really hard to find tight ends. Is there any chance that Jesse James, now a Detroit Lion, or Dwayne Allen, now Miami Dolphin, interests you at all at the end of draft, Matthew?
No.
No, if I had to pick one, I just jumping in there, I would lean Jesse James just because they have Mike Gesicki in Miami.
Yeah.
Should be their pass catching.
Yeah, James is
a good blocker, by the way, and that's again,
they're going to run the ball. Yeah.
They're going to run the ball. That's what they want to do with Daryl Bevel. That's part of the reason why that they brought him in as an offense coordinator. I mean, if you looked at him at any spot, they're going to run the ball. It's one of the reasons why I'm down on Matthew Stafford and why, you know, to your point, I agree Galladay is going to be fine. You like Jones a little bit more than I do. It's less about the talent to me. It's more about the pace of play and, you know, the run heavy nature of the offense. But whatever, Jones will be a fine wide receiver three, but No on Jesse James for me.
We got a bunch of guys that still have not yet signed. The list is led by, I'd say, Tevin Coleman, Randall Cobb, Jared Cook, some of the notable names, Golden Tate. Marshawn Lynch, if he returns back to Oakland, would be interesting. But for the most part, most of the meat is off the bone. We know where guys are going. We're going to come back to it at some point later on this month. We'll just see when the second wave of free agency kind of actually plays out and how it plays out. And perhaps we'll get more trades. Heck, for this at this rate, we've seen two massive ones before the league year has even begun.
There can be, the other thing I would say is Field, in addition to trades, in addition to some of these big names waiting to sign that you just mentioned, there will also be, there's potentially some releases that will happen that is, like as we just talked about.
No question about it.
The expectation is Isaiah Crowell will be released, right? And so, as teams make, acquisitions, then you suddenly they start looking at the players on their team and you start seeing guys out there as free agents and finding new homes. So be interesting to see like sort of, yeah, what happens with Isaiah Crowell. Does Jordan Howard get released if they can't find a trade right for him, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
And so on and so forth.
No doubt about it. So a lot of moves will keep up. And meantime, follow everybody on Twitter at Matthew Berry TMR. He is at Mike Clay NFL. I am at Field Yates. Matthew's doing some stuff on Instagram at Matthew Berry TMR. He's at Mike Clay NFL. I'm at Field Yates again and all those. And if you're listening to this, if it's out early.
Right. There'll be a mini episode of the Fantasy Show on ESPN Plus, nice. A down and dirty emergency show that Secret Squirrel and I are going to tape on an iPhone.
And at 7 o'clock tonight, if this is out by then, 7 p.m. Eastern time, I will be on a Twitter live show. I'm doing sort of a recap of free agency. Yeah, it's going to be fun. So
and I'll be on the daily Wager at 6 p.m.
Daily Wager
tonight.
At 6 p.m.
Oh, yeah.
ESPN News.
Daily. Get this thing out right now.
Daily Wager 6 p.m. 6 to 7 p.m. every Monday through Friday on ESPN News. Our friend Doug Kazarian, who we like a lot.
Awesome.
Mike Clay is on that. Our friend Andre Snellings is on there. Our friend Anita Marks is on there. So lots of fantasy folks represented there. I'm sure Field and I will get dragged in there at some point as well. So check out Daily Wager 6 to 7 p.m. on ESPN News. And good luck with the Twitter show. I guess we can just find that at Field Yates. I'm sure you'll tweet out a link.
Find it on Twitter. Yeah, that's where you can find the Twitter show is on Twitter. We'll talk to you guys at some point later on this month.
Peace out.